still against church policy to raise money in here. It is, and I know it, so you don't need to worry about that. But I could raise some money for College Golf Fellowship. Let me tell you, the privilege that I get to see what Lisa and Stephen Bunn do around the country, and I've got some friends that are on staff, and one of my best friends and I traveled down to do PGA Championship one year, and we're down there at Fred Funk's house and getting to meet some of those caddies that I try to keep in touch with some now. But thank you for what you and Lisa do, and Lisa, you sharing him with the world is a cost to you, so thank you for that. But really appreciate what y'all do, guys. And the impact, if y'all watch any recent golf, some of the top two golfers in the world today are products of this ministry that they do, and the impact and the salt and life that they are. Then to see what young kids who now aspire to be a Scotty Scheffler or the other guy.
Sam Burns.
Thank you. I hadn't watched a lot this year.
No, that's fine.
But,
nobody here knows who you're talking about anyway. So.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Stephen Bunn. But anyway, I came to know Christ by God's grace. My brother came home. I'd grown up in the church, Mount Brook Presbyterian Church on Brookwood Road. We moved here from New York. I was born in Atlanta, then we moved to Albany, Georgia, Mobile, Alabama, Buffalo, New York, and then moved back here. My dad was an electrical engineer with Westinghouse, so it was almost military every 2.5-3 years we moved. But we stayed here to finish school. But it was a real hard year moving here. I didn't like moving to New York, but by the time we left, I was going to be a pro hockey player, and I told my dad reminded me often that you told me you just ruined my pro hockey career. So that was kind of a goal. And we moved down here, and it was a very hard transition year because the play Damn Yankees was on in New York, and that's what I was referred to nonstop. It was a brutally hard year. I had a Jewish teacher. We spun dreidels and did stuff like that at Christmas time. I'm like, what the heck is the South like now? But anyway, we transitioned, and fortunately a new elementary school opened up. Everybody was new that went in there, so that was a game changer for us. So grew up in the church but didn't hear the gospel. All of a sudden at 14, Josiah Bancroft came over with some Briarwood guys one night and kind of went through the four laws, and I thought, that's interesting. Then fast forward to about a month and a half, and my brother came home and he said, Dan, if you died tonight, where would you spend eternity? I'm like, what in the world's going on with you? We went out to eat about a week later with a girl that he was dating, and we said a prayer right there in front of everybody in a public restaurant, and I thought, okay, it's the girl. That's all. Oh, this is the girl. But the problem became I'd get out of bed in the morning and my bed would be made up by the time I came back, or it was my week to do the dishwasher, set the table, and he would do it. And he was Mr. Everything at high school. And I started going, you got to stop this. You're messing with me doing this. But he continued. And so one night I hitchhiked over to a church, Brookwood Baptist. They had a celebrate life type of deal. And I knew the Lord was grabbing my heart. I went up front, prayed to receive Christ, committed my life to Christ, started a journal. Next Sunday I was here, on 280 at Briarwood. Would hitchhike to church on Sunday mornings. My parents were fine with me going. And if I could get a ride towards one Briarwood member that lived where I did in Cherokee Bend, they would take me. If I was late, they'd leave me. So, but it was funny. People were willing to give a kid a ride to church if that's where they were trying to go on a Sunday morning. Then I could start driving at 16, and I would catch both Frank's services most of the time every Sunday. I couldn't get enough. If somebody else were speaking, I may or may not stay oftentimes. I don't know if you were anybody that was here a long time. Sometimes you'd stay if it were somebody else, and if we liked it, we'd stay. If we didn't, we'd leave. But Frank usually taught our Sunday school class, and it was an unbelievable opportunity to soak up everything we could. Then we did an apologetics conference. Josh McDowell came in. We had the who's who in Christendom in the United States coming into Briarwood to speak constantly. I remember meeting Bill Bright. Josh McDowell came in, and he spoke twice. One of them was for four nights in a row, and I was there for every minute, and I soaked it up. And I just, that settled it. I knew Christ, and that's how I wanted to live. So fast forward from there, go to Auburn. Got involved with a Bible study there that grew to about 750 kids every week. John Riley's study did that, and I emceed that the last 3 years and organized college retreats. It was close. It was at Haley Center 2370. We're not going to talk about what happened yesterday. I already alluded to that, and that is what it is. There's death of visions that happen from time to time. And, my prognostication is that it may be a long season for us. So. But anyway, football is a great game and a lousy God is what I would tell you. Same for golf, same for anything else we do. So Ann and I had, we got married in 1980, and then we were together for 6 months living in Montgomery working for a company, Blunt International, and we got the notice to proceed on a big project in Saudi Arabia. So I went downstairs and said, put me in, I'm ready to play. And about 2 weeks later, they called and said, hey, would you go to South Korea for 4 weeks? And I said, if it gets me to Saudi Arabia, I'll go anywhere. So they sent me for 4 weeks. That turned into 4.5 months. About built some great relationships. Mind you, I was solo over there without my wife. But I started work a lot with the Korean guys and attended Young Knock Presbyterian. I reached out to Frank and he said, go to Young Knock, and there were 8 services a day. You walked in single file as other people coming out single file. But they preached the gospel, and there was also simultaneous translation. So that helped a lot. So did that, and then we went on into Arabia, and because of the relationships I built with the Koreans, I became what's called the Korean Joint Venture Coordinator, which meant I just traveled every 2 weeks somewhere in the world and worked for the Saudi Arabian National Guard, which was really our U.S. Army, as an accountant. So we had a great experience there for almost 4 years. Came back to Atlanta, got a master's in real estate, then went to work for a guy, Jim Wilson, in Montgomery, building shopping centers. We opened the Galleria, soft opening right in 85, I guess, just for depreciation because of the Tefford tax change that happened in 86. So all of a sudden one day he called in 30 of us and let go a third of his company, and about a month and a half later let go another third. I was in the first third. So I'm sitting there going, we've got one little boy, what do we do? In Saudi Arabia, we started a church on our compound. The first night I had a friend come and played a little electric piano. Mr. Blunt allowed us to get, and I spoke. Well, that grew to about 60 people every Sunday night we'd meet on our compound in Riyadh. I listened to Dallas Holmes' song last week, and I heard him singing Rise Again. I can tell you I bought a battery-operated radio player that was pretty loud. And hearing that the first Easter when we were out at a sunrise service out on the desert with probably about 45 people for sunrise service, worshiping the Lord Jesus Christ in the desert, that was really an event to behold. So we came back here, had one son when I was in graduate school in Atlanta, then we had 2 more sons when we moved back to Birmingham after leaving Mr. Wilson. And we'd started a real estate building company, a development company, and then we started a building company after that and grew that. But in graduate school, a friend had finished law school and gave me a Roberts International Company. He had to form it part of his law degree. So that was our first company, and we started manufacturing things in South Korea and bringing them back here just because of relationships, and that led to exporting products out of the United States to the Pacific Rim and bringing in different things. So kind of, I'm a little bit ADHD, and if you can't tell, and that really helped develop multiple things that we were doing right along the way, and the Lord blessed our business. We would manufacture, remember the white plumber's tape that people use to stop leaks and faucets? We would make 1/8 to 1 inch thick material, and we started our own factory in Incheon, South Korea. If you remember, that's where MacArthur went in to do his final stop there. That's now right along the DMZ. But in Incheon, we would get a manufacturing plant there. It's easier to export out of Incheon. And so we were bringing that in and selling it all over. And that was very successful for about 2 years. And then the rest of the world caught up with our manufacturing process, and it became a commodity item. So we backed off of that. But then we would export lumber from here and then import finished goods and furniture coming back, and lots of interesting opportunities. So we hooked up with the Alabama Development Office and found out what the people make here that they want to sell outside the U.S. And so we got Disney Candy. We'd export that all over the Pacific Rim. So constantly putting together people to make things happen. But the Lord blessed our church in Saudi Arabia. We then started, we had a big church that got stopped by the Matala, the religious police there. So we kind of started meeting secretly in villas with about 300 people. There were 8 of us that would meet on Saturday nights, and that church would meet on Sunday morning. And then all of a sudden they decided to start meeting, have one big Christmas event, and Metallo deported all seven of the other guys. I had gotten out of the speaker circuit for about 3 weeks because I was out of town. And so fortunately we didn't get deported. Two of the guys were military, Jeff. They got sent out. One was an Army captain. But you just got to see the Lord work, and to sit in a room with 300 people from all corners of the world, third country nationals to Europeans to Americans to Africans to Pakistanis, but to sit there and just worship the Lord. That's when I went, okay, this is real, that God works in Saudi Arabia, that God works in Korea. And we got to see Him work, so He is worthy of our trust. So we were living here and had three boys, and in 1992 or 1990, right before our third son was born, I thought the Lord was calling me to get involved with politics. So a friend from our church, Albert Lee Smith, came over one night and we visited in about 30 minutes, and then he landed it and he said, "Man, I think you can do it, and I think you can do it well. It'll just cost you those two little boys that you thought are in bed that are peeking around the corner right now, and the one your wife's carrying. If that's the cost you're willing to pay, go get it. But if my advice for you, let them get out of high school before you get involved with politics." Well, his taillights were not out of our driveway before we said, "We agree with that. Forget it." So we just shelved it. So fast forward, the boys are up, married. We now have eight grandchildren. Our eighth grandchild was born in March of this year, right after my wife went home to be with the Lord. She got COVID in December and then passed away on March the 4th. One of the toughest years I've had. She went in the hospital the day before we started this last legislative session the following day. And I appreciate the kindness of many of you here, in particular Jeff and Susan. They were just awesome. Stephen, your encouragement, and many others. But it's been a tough road, but I tell you what, she was the perfect helpmate. Best friend, love of my life, and I miss her terribly. But what I see is the Lord took her home. We had conversation, had prayer, and then almost a conversation last night about this, because I was in John 15. I don't know if any of you still do your annual read-through. And now it's Discipleship Journal. Remember we used to hand these out at Briarwood? You do this? So I found an old one, scanned it, and I make my own now annually. But I was in John 15 last night, and we all were familiar with John 15. As a matter of fact, John Donaldson stopped me as I was walking in today and said, "I was just thinking this morning, remember when you called on Frank in our class? Our teacher didn't show up that day." I said, "Frank, can you preach in our Sunday school class?" He goes, "Sure." And it was like press and play. He did John 15. We've all heard that from him how many times. "But I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser," is how that chapter starts. But that's really what I would ask you. For us, it was March the 4th. It was really January the 10th. We had battled COVID hard since the 17th of December, and we were at two Briarwood events, two nights in a row right before Ann got COVID. And I had done the very best I could to protect her. I was in and out of Montgomery, lots of meetings, and I just assumed I would get it at some point. And I wonder if I didn't get it January of 20. A friend called, and his daughter was in the hospital in the emergency room in Auburn, and I was speaking on a big tax, business tax plan I really worked on hard for 22 months that we did pass, thanks to BMSS and a bunch of other accountants that came together to run a bunch of modeling for us on that, that made Alabama one of the most competitive places or states to do business in. That was passed and signed by the governor, first bill she signed in 2021. But the result of that was that we built a bunch of relationships through that tax bill, plus working with physicians on how to best care for COVID. And we were able to be very successful and get monoclonal antibodies into the state. Here again, it's God's providence. Because of what I've done in the past, you walk in the legislature and all of a sudden somebody needs something, I usually have an idea of who to go to, where I can call people like Jeff or Ty or Stephen or any of y'all in here and go, "You know somebody for this." And it's been fascinating the way the Lord's worked. My second year there, they asked me to start serving as chaplain. So every week I get to do a devotion with the Senate. And the last year and a half, I have brought the goods almost every week and made it real clear. And it's amazing the number of people that will, Cinder, you have a minute to talk. And there are gospel opportunities every week, if not every day, but almost every day. From assistants who are struggling with something, somebody's just lost a parent, somebody that's got a child that has addiction, which we have a number two son that's been in 14 rehabs, so we know a little bit about that and have been able to affect some legislation dealing with that. You know, as you go to your local convenience store, all those energy bottles they have there, we were able to stop phenobut and theophanine and Kraton, those three. But as Commissioner Dunn will tell you, there are other ones that will be on those shelves right behind this. It was 3 days the last time we stopped theophanine before phenobut came out, and we were able to get that on another bill before we finished the session. But we had five people overdose in Sneed, Alabama, all of a sudden, seemingly overnight. Same looking bottle, same color pill, same pill amount, but they changed the name. This happened to be a South American kind of tranquilizer. Of course, they don't recommend you take more than that, but there's no FDA authorization needed for, supplements. So none of that's required, but there's a kid from right where we're, the city that part of our church is in, that I got a picture from the mom in the back of a Lexus SUV going to Bradford with no idea what's going on with their son, but he's totally in withdrawals from taking stuff that he got at his local convenience store. And I've met with all the big Alabama wholesale broker guys, the guys that stock those, but they also have truck slammers, guys that just drive up, they'll sell you some of this and close, and they've got a 250% margin when they sell a bottle of that there. But it'll destroy your kids or grandkids is what I'll tell you. So just be aware your local convenience store is not absolutely safe. So there are all kind of things that come at us as we move along, and that's where the Lord has allowed me to represent you and deal with some of those things, from business taxes to individual taxes. I was able to get the bill passed that stopped any tax on any of the stimulus monies that came from Washington. There are other states that didn't choose to allow that to go through without being taxed, and we did. So the foregoing of revenue on the part of the state, the Department of Revenue and Education in particular, is a tremendous feat to get done, and I'm not sure we would get it done where we currently stand. We should have probably $1 billion more for education this year than what we had last year, and this isn't a legislative overview, but just for your information. So I would anticipate that we'd do something to give money back to you guys along those lines, but we'll get away from politics. But I've seen the Lord work at every one of these steps. And he opens the door. Every day I ask the Lord to cause people to love me, to give me favor in their eyes, and to give me power in their lives as I surrender to him in a vessel of honor in his hand. That's just the way I roll. Do I make mistakes? Every day. But my goal has been to be a vessel of honor in his hand, however he wants to use me. And sometimes there's a cost of that, because people make comments, just like in grade school. It is hilarious to me. Oh, you don't do that, Robert. You're a Christian or something. And that's not that blatant, and it's not as often as it used to be, but there'll be a little side comments, or we're going to go over here or slip out here, or there may be times where we gather in office for something else and I don't get invited to that. I'm totally good with that. So it's no different in what you face at work, what you face with your folks. But just be salt and light. And it goes back to really Ty's question. And I ask that with guys. I don't normally ask that of women. But with some of the stuff I deal with younger ladies today, and I have eight grandchildren, six of those are gals, the oldest is 12. What I see the young ladies dealing with are the romance novels, the other ways of love, whether it's glued to Hallmark channels, this is what love is, or that. But I would tell you, you be the example of what love is to your children, to your grandchildren, and make sure that what they're taking in is good for them. And it's hard, and you know, it brings us back to education policy. We are fighting very hard the divisive concepts that are in education, and that's whether you're at a private school or whether you're at a public school. But there's a lot that we can try to do at the legislative level, but there's a whole lot you need to do as a parent and a grandparent here with your children. And that's been a whole new concept. I had a grandchild come home and show me a drawing one day, and she started to describe the drawing, and I went, my side, this something's going on, and there's a whole lot more to than what she described, and she was a K-5er at that time. And so I talked to the parents about it, and they thought, oh, that's no big deal. Well, fast forward about a couple of weeks, all of a sudden they went, I see what you mean, Dad. So there are all kind of things that are coming into our society. I look back at Jeff and Susan Dunn, the service that they did for our state as prison commissioner and then as White House decorator for Christmas over there. They served our state incredibly well, but he was dealing with some of the toughest of the tough in our state. And here's the battle. We're trying to build two new prisons right now. We allocated the monies to go forward to build those prisons. But anybody familiar with ESG?
Yes.
Environmental Social Governance. You may not be familiar with it. I'd encourage you to read about it. We'll deal with legislation, trying to deal with that, but it is at such a macro standpoint. Last week I was out with one of my best friends, Jerry Leachman, his wife Holly. We're in Colorado, so we had dinner with a wood products group. They make all the product that goes into Miracle-Gro that's sold all over the western part of the United States. Their main ingredient, what they produce comes out of that, and it's all wood products, cellulose. He said his bank, I'll name the bank, U.S. Bank, called him in Pueblo, Colorado, and said, can you come in and meet with us? So he has no debt on the books with them. He's pretty much a cash guy. And they encouraged him to move to another bank because he being a company that banks with U.S. Bank was lowering their ESG score. So they encouraged him to bank elsewhere in pretty sizable accounts. ESG's goal is, number one, to lower the world temperature by 2 degrees Celsius. And the third one, I will look up the second one. The third part of it is to bring the United States in full compliance with the Paris Climate Accord. So that's where they're going. I have friends that are on bank boards in other states, and he said it's inordinate how long bank board meetings take now as we meet because we're having to evaluate who we bank, what they are doing. But anyway, I would encourage you to just stay tuned with what ESG is. Look, if we're going to be salt and light in the way we bank, in the way that we live our lives, I'd encourage you to be aware of some of these things. That is going to come along and impact negatively. It started in West Virginia. The West Virginia treasurer put together a letter which Young Boozer, our treasurer of the state of Alabama, signed on to. I think there were 23 or 24 signatures on that saying, we will choose where we bank based on your compliance with ESG. And we've had some conversations about legislation that we're contemplating now. But they are going to totally change Alabama. If you take out our wood products, work in Alabama, it's our number two export out of our state. This is a huge industry in our state. And oh, by the way, they would also not be in favor of anything that has to do with fossil fuels. So Texas is being tremendously adversely affected, as is Oklahoma, as is their parts of Alabama, some of our methane production. So there are lots of moving parts where this wokeness is trying to come in and totally change your lifestyle. I would say if you look at what happened in California, we want you to be all electric, but oh yeah, don't charge your car right now. I've got a friend who's building some larger multifamily properties in the Panhandle of Florida, and they want to have more than X number of places for people to charge their car. Power company said if we give you any more, you'll crash the grid. So they're anticipating more and more electric vehicles that will need to charge at this residential facility. The power company saying we won't be able to handle that demand load when you want to charge your cars. So it's a upside down world, but only the Lord can transform the hearts of those that are in leadership and impact what you're doing. So bottom line, what I would tell you is not whether you vote for me, it is that you show up and vote. Jefferson County, are you aware of all the gaming operations that go on from north of Trussville over to the Bessemer Cutoff across the entire northern part of our county?
would guess it's somewhere $750,000 a day goes through illegal gaming operations. Most of them are the bingo machines that they think are okay. But you can raid a bingo place, take the machines out, and they'll be back in business the next day. The person responsible for enforcing that law, who would that be? Any idea? Who's the highest constitutional officer in Jefferson County?
Sheriff.
Sheriff. He's the highest constitutional officer. So our former governor, Bentley, did an executive order, and he put that on the sheriffs of each county to enforce our laws that say you're not, those are illegal by our Supreme Court, even the bingo machines are illegal. So it is almost...
That Bentley?
Hmm?
That Sheriff Bentley?
I'm not going to name a name, but you're right there. Especially if there may be relatives involved or something like that. But guys, I'm telling you, this is Jefferson County. I don't know of any in Shelby County right now, but I think if we don't do something, Mississippi allowed the gaming to go on, which there's going to be a big push for us again this
just
session.
To follow, but in, is it Hudson running against them?
Jared Hudson.
Just clarify.
I was with him. I was with him yesterday. He's a fine guy. Mm-hmm. But if every Republican in Jefferson County showed up and voted, he would win. This complacency of not showing up at polls, and you go, well, it doesn't matter my vote. There's a guy named Tom Whiteley who's in Lee County who lost by one vote, was removed from office by one vote as a state senator this last time. So anyway, yeah, our turnout was less than 20% in my Senate district this last time in May. So fortunately we won, but those are scary things. So I do see it as our constitutional responsibility and as citizens of this country to show up and vote. I'd really encourage you to do that. And that's not, I'm not trying to be self-serving. I'm saying I want to see Jared. I want to see a sheriff elected who will enforce the law in our county. It'll make a difference. So anyway, enough. I'm not trying to be political here. But that's where God has us, me, now. So, and we were married 41 years, dated 4 years before we got married in December of 1980, and we're together 6 months, then I left for 4 months, and then came home for 3 weeks, and was gone for 2.5 months. But we met in Frankfurt, Germany, the day before our first anniversary. Had 10 days, rented a car, drove all over Europe, and had a great time doing that. Then I took her into Saudi Arabia. We were still living in a hotel before our compound was built, and she made the most of it. Just, she couldn't go except inside the hotel, wasn't allowed to go outside and walk around. But she felt like, I felt like the Lord had called us there, and we started that little church the first week we were on our compound, and that grew 40 to 60 people depending on the service or who was speaking. But it was so fun. We were meeting at the exact same time that Briarwood's 11 o'clock service was here. We were meeting. We were 8 hours ahead. So we were meeting there in Saudi Arabia. And that was always pretty cool. But we had a bunch of believers that were on the job site that would have otherwise not had a church. And then that opened up gospel opportunities with the Koreans. John Riley, as I mentioned earlier, led this big study at Auburn. And so we brought him over to Saudi Arabia, so he spoke for the Koreans, he spoke for our group, he spoke for one of the secret churches that we have, and it was just a great experience. And then Friday after speaking, we drove downtown Riyadh. We call it Chop Chop Square, but had never seen any evidence, but we pulled up down there, and it was kind of cordoned off, so we got out and was standing going, what's going on? Two Toyota Jeeps pulled up, three guys were marched out, and summarily beheaded right there from me to the wall, the back wall there. Not the window wall, but just through there. And they're sitting there going, wow. Well, these guys had assaulted shopkeeper, were caught on the way out on a Sunday, and so this was Friday that their sentence was carried out. So it was really sobering living there. But you did feel safe, I will tell you this. Your money was extremely large, so we had almost checkbook or a little bit bigger than checkbook size wallets that would stick out of the back of your pocket. And but you did feel safe there. But it was very different, so you had to be aware. And I don't know if you've ever had a misunderstanding with your bride, but we had one driving downtown one day. So Ann said, please pull over. She got out and walked about half a block. I pulled a little ahead, and then I waited. and she came and got back in the car because the number of people that stopped and spoke to her or whatever, you realize it wasn't safe for her to walk down there. So, and the sad part to me about that was they thought American women were just like the ones they'd see on the movies or magazines or videos that they could download even at that time. And we're exporting so much filth to the rest of the world. I can see how those that want to hold to a moral purity are not as big a fans of us as a nation as others might be. Here again, I would tell you, for guys, the secret that Ty and I talked about and the rest of our group that day, I asked that for guys, so I'm just asking you guys, do you have a secret? I'm not asking for an answer, but I'm going to tell you this, your secrets will destroy you. They will make you powerless in being able to effectively walk, serve, and do what you do as a guy. Just my two thoughts on that. And then the last thing I would leave with is friendships. We built a group. I've got seven guys, and then there's a core group in that of four guys. And I kind of liken it to, if you've ever heard Leachman talk, it's friendship talk. But you have casual acquaintances, those with whom you interact with, but they're not ones that you have discretionary time. Then the next level from that is those with whom you choose to spend discretionary time. And then after that, there's a closer group of people. And then out of that closer group would be the ones that, in pro sports, you would call it a franchise tag that you would put on. You see that particularly in NFL and Major League Baseball. They'll put a franchise tag on certain players, and those guys can't be traded. So guys, in particular, I would ask, who's in your closest group? Who are the guys that you can be real with, that you basically have friends that have a franchise tag that you're going to do life with? And I've been blessed to have that with guys. And walk through losing your bride, and you'll find out who your four guys are, how you're going to make it through that. Because you get through the shock, everybody's bringing food, it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then all of a sudden, it's that pebble that hits the water. There are big ripples, and then the pond smooths out. Everybody's back to their normal life. And I sat in bed last night reading and praying and had that conversation I told you about with the Lord. I don't question. I had several people tell me, Dan, you just have to have enough faith to pray. And so that was my conversation with him last night. If you ask anything in my name, I will do it. And I said, Lord, I trust you completely. The day after she went in hospital, I was standing in the backyard with our two dogs. And I just raised my hands to the Lord. And I just said, Father, I vow to you, I will praise you, whether you give her back or whether you take her home. But my ask is that you give her back. And so we went through 55 days while she was in hospital. I'd drive down to Montgomery in the morning and be back before dark to stand outside her window to just check on her. Fortunately, I could see through the window. I had many friends, and they were on the 7th or 8th floor, and they couldn't gain access to the hospital. During COVID, we did pass a law that made it so you could get in, but only at the very end of someone's life. So that was just inhumane what we went through, and I think we've learned a lot of lessons on how to do it. But the times I got in right before she passed away, I was sitting there holding her hand. She was not conscious after January the 10th. We made it to hospital. She was having a little trouble breathing. Her SO2 numbers were like 58, 54. So I had gotten a new machine plus supplemental air, so I was giving her a boatload of oxygen. But the problem wasn't getting oxygen in. It was clearing it out from her lungs with COVID there. So we're there, and the doctor walks in. And here's my question to you. If he walks in and says to you, you got 10 minutes to say goodbye. This is probably the last conversation you're going to have with your wife. I'd make it count. I'll be right back. And you're going. Fortunately, we didn't have many things to clear up. In fact, we didn't have any. She had done that the day before. I think she knew. But I was giving her injectable blood thinners for 2 weeks at home. Had abdominally 2x a day. Basically the same protocol she would have had in the hospital, but for a ventilator. And I needed a BiPAP, and I could not find a BiPAP. I called everybody I knew that might have a BiPAP, and of course they're sold out across the country. But we would have tried that for a bit longer, but I was under great physician care while we were there. But what if somebody walked in today, or you had an event that happened with your spouse, and the doctor goes, you got 10 minutes, make it count. So during that 10 minutes, we pretty much already said everything, but I said it again, as did she. Then she called our middle son, who was away, and I recorded that. And that was a precious 2 or 3 minutes. Probably went into 18 minutes, to be honest. I think they waited for us to finish phone calls. We FaceTimed with her mother, and she had a great conversation. And they always ended every call, "I love you the most." It's, "No, I love you the most." They would go back and forth, and that could get a little obnoxious years ago, but that was really precious this time. And then she got to speak to every grandchild and got to speak to the daughter-in-laws who answered on the first ring with a FaceTime call. And it was a precious moment. But that's the other thing I'd ask. God's secrets, they'll destroy you. Number two, hopefully you're with your beloved bride. There's tensions that just happens in life. Just make sure the air is clear. Total forgiveness. There's a book R.T. Kendall wrote on total forgiveness. And that set me free. And I had to go back to 1968. A couple of things happened in fifth grade. Now they're going to spin the dreidel, but there was a group of guys that decided they hated damn Yankees, is what they would say. So there was one guy that I hadn't totally forgiven. I read this book about 5 or 6 years ago. And then there was one other event that I realized I need to totally forgive. I've seen so many guys get set free with that book. But, you know, it's at the end of the Lord's Prayer. If you don't forgive someone else, you're carrying around a boatload of extra weight. So what benefit is it for you to carry around a 50-pound bag of concrete when the person who offended you probably isn't thinking about that? So I'd encourage you to live with total forgiveness in mind. Have no secrets. And be salt and light today. And look for opportunities to serve. And our family motto is, you can fake caring, you can't fake showing up. So show up. That's it. We had one of our senators who needed a procedure. So he said, "You know anybody?" So I got it straight. Got him set up to see the doctor. When he had his first visit, I showed up there. Next visit, I showed up. Then he was going to spend the night and eat dinner. Had our whole family, all the boys coming over. He happens to be the Senate Minority Leader. Of course, he didn't call me that whole day. And about 10:45, he calls, "You still taking me in the morning?" "Yes, sir, I am." So I picked him up at 4:45, and I stayed with him all day. Fast forward 6 weeks away, we're at an event speaking about 700 people. And he tells that story. That this is what we do in the Senate. We show up for each other, and I thought, touchdown. Guys, you never know. You can fake hearing, you can't fake showing up. Don't have a secret. Father, we thank you for this chance to be together today. Discombobulated this is, Lord, we thank you that in our mess, you bring order, that you have a plan. And I pray in particular for the guys in here that they would not have a secret in their life, that they would deal with that ruthlessly and not be held captive and be powerless. And then for husband and wives, Lord, that there would be total forgiveness and a newness, realizing that at any minute, 10 minutes to say goodbye could happen, or it may not even be given that much time. Lord, would we be salt and light in our community, in our city, in our state, and in this nation. And I pray in particular for Gary Palmer, that you would bless him. And I thank you that he's willing to get on a plane and fly back to D.C. weekly. Bless he and Ann and Robert and the two daughters, CNC, and go with them. And Lord, we love you and commit this to you in Christ's name. Amen. Thank you, guys.